Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Time now for...
The NASCAR guy, right? You know, shake and bake, right? Magic Man, right? Thunder Lightning, yeah.
Overreaction Monday!
Remind everybody that it's Columbus Day. All those of you that know Italians and like Italians are the people that might venture onto a ship and travel to explore and find new lands. This is your day.
And here's Dan.
Welcome to the pod. It is the Monday Overreaction Show. Or what do we call it? We call it Overreaction Monday. I can't even get the damn. My hosting skills are as good as my picking skills.
Yeah.
I do want to address Race for the Case. I think it's absolutely terrible that we forgot to make any picks last week. And so there's no selections made. So we might not as well discuss what's going on with that.
We have a new entrant. New entrant in our pick life. Nad, the opposite of Dan. A new juggernaut putting tap in our memory banks forever. Nad is just dominating. Nad didn't slow him down by COVID, all right? Nad can see right through all these funky rosters and all the different ruminations. And he smelled the Sun Belt coming in April. Nad knew it all. Nad saw it all. Nad knew Lawrence at night wasn't that intimidating.
Nad went 6-0. He went
6-0,
which means I went 0-6.
Yeah.
The problem was I had my entire research and statistical analysis team, all 40 of them were out with COVID. I was depleted like the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah. All your and analysts.
So
that,
no, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to. So I lost. I mean, I lost with blowouts. I lost with backdoor covers. I lost with like Clemson not clicking. I lost every single way. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I did not spend any time really analyzing the Coastal Carolina Kansas game. I picked Iowa State because Bush Light had come out with a new beer, like beer paint job. It was corn inspired for Iowa. The damn Cyclone should be ashamed for the entire state.
They should.
Well, to get all six wrong, you have a 3% chance.
That's impressive.
It's good work.
And I hit the 3%. And it's actually worse. Wait, I'm going to figure this out. It's actually, let's see, 1 in 128 is 7, because I also, this was really not really a real bet, but I bet my buddy Aaron Garza, who's a big Texas fan, that UTEP would cover. Six-pack of beer, so I got to give Garza a six-pack of beer.
You once again need to get off the UTEP homerism.
I know. It was a point of pride. I was there for you, El Paso. Didn't work, though. That was ugly. It was like 45. They scored on the first play. Texas scored. I mean, I was getting 43.5, and it was out of reach by halftime pretty much.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to do better next week. I just know it.
Well, you almost can't do worse. So
maybe I should try to pick the losers, see what happens. Good God.
I mean, if Pat had adopted the opposite strategy of what he thought last year, he would have run away with the race.
Yeah,
he would
I know.
Have run away with it. So if you embrace the suck, as Pat Fitzgerald has long told us to do, if you just say, you know what, I'm really lousy at this, I'm going to do the opposite of it. I think you will show Nad who's who.
We will get to the Big 12's disaster.
Yeah,
because they should have a revote and choose not to play, as far as I'm concerned, some of these teams. But let's get to the big story. The Big Ten is back from the dead. The Big Ten is going to have a vote, maybe, or an agreement, or they're going to put a little white cloud out the chimney there in Rosemont, Illinois. I don't know.
There's a photo to Chow right next to the Big Ten that people made a big deal of when the parents were protesting there. Maybe they'll just put all green lights on the restaurant balcony as like a white as a white cloud for playing or something.
They might they bring out a sword full of meat, and if it's got flag that says play and then another one that says no play, and whichever one they hold out the door.
Randy Wade will eat it like a spear, like on a sword. Like.
So late last week, the medical committee basically put together a presentation. Heavy based is what I'm being told on the the eventual, the soon availability of the rapid testing, the lack of the heart concerns as time has gone on, million different things. The Big Ten, which is, you know, always in this state of combat, started to flip. There is not a vote yet. It's not a certainty, but all of a sudden late last week, there became a ton of optimism and we may be getting something. I've been told the 17th or the 24th of October. You guys can come up with whatever you got. It could be as little as 6 regular season games, probably more. At least one crossover, maybe 2 crossovers. You get to 8 regular seasons. You try to jam it in, get the Big Ten title game played by 12-19, December 19th, and you got a shot at the playoff. Rapid testing, though, huge thing. They're expecting it. Obviously, so is the Pac-12. Which is, you know, kind of eyeing that same time frame, but they're stuck with 6 schools that literally can't practice due to local ordinances or guidances or whatever we're calling it. But Pete, I'll start with you. Big Ten, what are you hearing as of Sunday night? And are you as optimistic as I am that this is going to happen?
I mean, it's the Big Ten. So they're going to make it as difficult as possible if there's one thing we've learned in the last 5 months, right? So my sources are optimistic. There is a general overtone of optimism that I felt throughout today. And I wasted way too many hours on Sunday just sort of like monitoring this, chasing this. It's somewhat hilarious that some of like the people who are very involved in the future of the Big Ten have no idea what's going on. So like they're sending me like the Cookie Monster finger gif, like waiting to hear what's happening. By all accounts, the presentation. And by the way, the Big Ten, they may not make the playoff this year, but they are going to lead college football in committees for years to come. Because once I start naming these different committees that they have here, so it's, I believe, the Return to Competition Committee presented Saturday to the Steering Committee of Presidents, and then Sunday they presented to the COPC, the Chair Council of Presidents and Chancellors. Yeah, I was going to say commissioners. Anyway, it's a lot of alphabet soup. Talked to a couple people who saw the medical presentation at some juncture on its way there, and they said it was nails. Like, they said it's 2 hours long, and it's really detailed, and it answers all of the questions that were there 6 weeks ago. Because the big thing when they do come back that they're going to have to do is be like, wait a minute. You just told us 4 or 5 weeks ago, you know, really a month ago almost, a little more than a month ago, like, we couldn't do this. And now you're going to say we can do this. Why? And so they laid out in detail. So they're not going to announce, I don't think, daily rapid testing like immediately when they do this, but that's certainly going to be part of this. That's been a given for a while. They will likely not take that from the federal government. And you can listen to like some New York Times or Politico or Fox News podcasts if you want to learn why they won't take it from the federal government. But you could probably guess in the middle of election season with a bunch of swing states. And then the answers were there for myocarditis, which 4 or 5 weeks ago was, you know, in the wake of what happened in the Indiana lineman, and, you know, there was a lot of pause and hesitation around that. Now there seem to be answers for that. There seem to be answers for contact tracing. And this is the one fundamental tension I haven't got a pithy answer to. Can the presence of daily rapid testing mitigate contact tracing? Now, it does in the NFL, but the NFL had to essentially go to government officials in all the different states where they were going to play and get a waiver to do this. I am not sure if that has happened yet in the Big Ten footprint. So there seems to be a path. Like for a while in the Big Ten, there wasn't a path for medical answers. That seems to have changed. Will they actually play and start October 17th and have a conference title game on the 19th? I don't know that right now. My guess would be yes. But 2 weeks ago, I would have guessed they weren't going to play until Thanksgiving because that's what everybody was saying. So things can change. It's fluid, but there is clearly momentum here that did not exist the last time we taped this podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm hearing largely the same stuff as Pete. My only thing here is that
you hate football and you don't want it to happen?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Let's hear from a few more of those people. You know, like if you're in a coaching search and you've got a guy and you come to an agreement with the guy, but then you let him get on the plane and go back home. I think if they would have voted Sunday night, I would feel obviously then we'd know. But pushing it off till Monday just leaves the door open this much for maybe the presidents go back and talk to some trustees or whatever and say, I don't know. I don't know whether I'm going to pull the trigger on this. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they will pull the trigger. I think they will vote to play. I think they will try to play in October. But you just wonder the fact that it didn't happen Sunday night, what, why, and then what's going to, if that's going to affect things at all going forward. Because this is still such a politically tricky, and I'm not talking about actual politics. I'm talking about university campus politics. Tricky
like
thing for a
politics,
lot of these.
Yeah. Yes. Office in, politics.
Yes. Yeah. Office politics is, you know, at Michigan, where there's thousands of students that are outraged that they are having class, and you're all of a sudden going to say, well, but we're going to play football over here, and we're going to get those guys daily testing. Rest of y'all, nah, you know, good luck in the quarantine dorm with the cockroaches and the bad food, but we're going to daily test the football team over here. So there's that. There's Rutgers president that came out in very hard lines, said, I don't like this situation, last week to Steve Politi in that really interesting column in the NJ.com. You know, there's been, I mean, Wisconsin's campus is shut down basically for like 2 weeks. Minnesota's campus, I believe, is shut down right now. There's issues that these guys, I think that the presidents and chancellors have to kind of navigate here. So it's not, they may well vote yes. I expect them to vote yes. I expect them to vote to play and to go forward with this, but still going to be, there's going to be some blowback for a lot of people.
Here's the thing. So there is all these issues, right? Wisconsin's on pause. Rutgers, Michigan State, the county officials urged every Michigan State student to self-quarantine for the next 2 weeks. Good luck. But, you know, this is self-quarantine with, as long as the liquor store is open, we can make, you know, emergency runs. We'll be all right. The weed dealer is still going. We can quarantine. But, no, I mean, some of this makes – in the real world, none of this makes any sense, right? But we don't care. This is important, and it makes a lot of money, and they need the money, and they're staring at it. This is actually what they should have done originally and saved themselves a lot of grief.
Yeah.
And said, we're playing September 26th, like the SEC, and then you just shut up. We don't know that the SEC is going to play on September 26th because we aren't there yet.
Right.
They're endeavoring to, but we're seeing all sorts of canceled games. I mean, Virginia Tech's tried twice to play. They didn't, you know, we're seeing Big 12 games canceled. We're seeing, so you could very easily have said, we want to play this September 26th. And then all of a sudden right now say, look, we're going to push it back a couple weeks. And it's not as big of a, why'd you quit? What'd you do? You know? And so this is, if they come in and say, we're going to start October 17th, you know, this is going to be our schedule. And then they're not comfortable with where it's at. They can, in early October, they say, we're going to move it back 1 week. It's not as big of this train wreck that they've had.
Right.
And I think this is a much smarter way to do it. Now, the one thing to me is going to be the liability of, you said it wasn't safe once, and now you're saying it's safe. And if anything happens, but. Right. These schools have a lot of lawyers and a lot of insurance and whatever. They seem willing to make that. They also have a ton of money on the line, where maybe a couple legal losses aren't the biggest concern. You're not going to lose more money that way. So this is really interesting. But clearly, once they became more comfortable late last week, all of a sudden everyone started chattering. People that were saying there's no way all of a sudden started saying there's a way. Yeah. I think this might happen. It was very interesting to see. So I bet they announced they're going to play. Once the ball's kicked off is when I'll fully believe it. But I think, you know, I think they're on their way. And let me say this. We need it. Like, college football to me, Saturday was okay. And I know, again, like, we're supposed to be, everything's great. If you say anything bad, like, you're the worst person, you hate. We're missing a lot. There's not enough games. College football is a symphony.
Yeah.
It is a symphony. And you need all the instruments.
Yeah. You need a violinist and you need the guy playing the garbage can on the street.
You do. That's
both those two.
That's basically a guy in the garbage can in an empty Kansas stadium is what we're getting. Now,
Now, you bet on the garbage can, by the way, Dan. So.
Yeah, it doesn't mean a guy. It doesn't mean that guy can't put out some good music, or a band of just trumpets, or a drum line. Yeah, we need the whole marching band here, and you need all the. We need. I thought it would be better, even with like just some playing, but like you're just missing some of the mayhem when you don't have enough games and you don't have everybody right. in it. And the entire Midwest is basically, and the West Coast, just not playing. And you're like, even as entertainingly nuts as Kansas Coastal Carolina was, you wanted another game you could click to too.
Sure.
Like, where's Boise?
When you're stuck with just Coastal Carolina and Kansas,
that's not good enough. Right.
No, it's not.
You're like, oh, but Colorado State's up on Fresno too. Like, this is exciting. Like, where's the, you're not getting it all. And it's like, where is it? And I know, look, we're going to get the SEC, which is the big dog, but it's like, we're just not getting enough. And so get me some Big Ten back here. And maybe Larry Scott's little plan where he's got the thing gets them going by late October too. Let's get it all going. Cause I miss, I didn't think it'd be as big of a deal, and it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt that I think your symphony analogy is a really good one, because
not that I ever go to the symphony, by the way.
Well, no, you would know nothing about an actual
of
symphony.
Of all people who would invoke the symphony. It's a bad symphony. Oh, okay. Yeah, like symphony expert me.
Yeah. The woodwinds were a little weak tonight. But that's the thing. You know, the one thing we got this weekend that we didn't have the first weekend was we got the upsets and like the, oh my God, did you see that crazy play in Louisiana, Iowa State? And then did you see that crazy ending over here, you know, with the Arkansas State, Kansas State or whatever. So you at least had that. But the breadth of it and the scope are just, they're still too limited at this point. And, you know, if you want that full day, noon till 2 a.m., you need more teams, you need more people. And that's the thing, hey, like BYU was going to be the only team in the two Western time zones, right? They were the only team in the Pacific time zone and the Mountain, and now they're out because they got a COVID deal. So your guys, the UTEP Miners, are now the furthest west team that's still standing for now. Hopefully BYU comes back. But right now we're losing teams, man.
College football is a sport predicated on gluttony. All right. When you're young, you drink too much and you go to the game. When you're old, you sit around and you eat too much. And you are surrounded from noon to midnight by way too many options. All right. There were like times where usually when I'm home watching games on the weekends, I don't go cover them. Like you feel like you're missing out. I've got my phone screen on. I've got my computer screen on. I've got my TV screen on. And you're constantly just in this oversensitized state. Like there's so much happening. Saturday. And again, like God bless it. It's been that way for years. And it is what makes the sport unique and special. Unlike the NFL, unlike anything else. No baseball fans are sitting around being like, oh, I'm watching the Cubs and the Red Sox and the whatever. All right. So Saturdays are for gluttony. And while it was wondrous to have all the games, there were three or four moments during the day where I was like, flip up the scores, which is sort of like your TV guide. And I was like, oh, I'm not really going to watch Campbell and Georgia Southern. I'm just not, you know, like I know
I kind of wanted to watch them.
Yeah, no, that's fine, Pat. Like
I just wanted to see what Georgia Southern's sideline looked like with 33 players out.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's totally fair. So, and again, the we missed the Pac-12 certainly late at night. And yeah, there just isn't the depth that where you're just constantly overwhelmed. Well, what's happening here? Like college football is a FOMO sport, right? When you're home on a Saturday, you constantly have a fear of missing out of something that's happening somewhere. And I didn't really feel that on Saturday. And yeah, no. And it got lonely at night just watching Lester sort of overwhelmed on the sidelines there. Just felt a little sad for old Lester.
So let me ask this. Let's say the Big Ten is back. They pick the October 17th and they try to play eight regular season games.
Yeah, they've got like a 9-week window to play eight games, right? Yeah.
Now, I've been told six is possible, really. Like, they just played divisions and then a thing. So a six-game regular season. But Let's split that and say 7 or 8, one crossover or 8. The SEC right now is scheduled to play 10 league games. Let's say you get to that. I mean, this will be like the, if all these games go off, which would be great. But I like the chances because I think in a month, the rapid testing will be so much closer, if not here. How do you, how would you equate that if they're play, if they play 7 in 9 weeks, is 7 enough when someone else playing 10? Well, if you're 9-1 LSU and you only lost to Alabama, you really want to listen to?
It's a great question. Know, here's what
7-0 Wisconsin that won the West,
right?
And basically had to play one Ohio State game or something, or what? Yeah, I mean,
then here's what we get: we get the Ohio State hissy fit part two. They already hissy fitted their way into having a season or are on the brink of it. But then it's like, you have to consider us. You have to. These kids have sacrificed so much. That's what we'll get.
That committee has left the Big Ten out a bunch.
Yeah, it has.
So it that has, is very interesting there.
Look, hey, hissy fits have worked for Ohio State. Okay? They've worked in this instance. And if you remember when Terrell Pryor and those guys all got to play in the Sugar Bowl because they went to Jim Delaney and said, hey, Jim, you got to talk the NCAA into this. And he did it. Gene Smith gets his way, man.
Well, we want gluttony, right? Like, there will be a gluttony of controversy if there's, like, a disparity in the number of games, right? Like, I mean, like, we have, for the college football playoff, for what we thought it was going to be compared to the reality, there's been some light, moderate controversy. But for the most part, the thing has gone by pretty scot-free. The first year was probably the most contentious. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong there.
I'd agree.
The TCU-Baylor year, like, this is the year the mailboxes are getting firebombed. This is the year where there's just going to be so many different arguments and so many different ways. Now, it will be completely fascinating. Like, what happens if Minnesota goes undefeated in the West? These schedules are going to be based mostly on region, right? You know, is undefeated Minnesota better than two-loss Auburn? You know, but the losses are LSU and Bama or something like that. Like, that is just going to just drive people apoplectic and be completely ludicrous. So, yeah, maybe that'll bring some element of normalcy back.
You know what? And here's the other thing, too, is especially, I mean, with just the conferences playing within themselves and no outside data, basically, of playing other opponents, it's going to be totally look test, much more subjective. You know, of, oh, well, this just, we just think they're better. And man, oh man, you know how those arguments go.
Well, and we don't know, even as these schedules lay out, what games are going to be postponed or if not canceled. Right now they're postponing them, but they're going to run out of dates. You know, so Virginia Tech, Virginia, that's gone, right? There were 3 Big 12 games canceled last weekend. Now, only one of them is because of the Big 10, Big 12's fault.
TCU had the case.
Oklahoma looks like, I mean, how many guys were they down?
17. No, actually more than 20. They were down more than 20. Kansas State was supposedly
down.
How
many on the 2 deep? It was a bunch on the 2 deep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A bunch of them.
So
yeah,
what, they could beat Missouri State like that, but what if that's their game against Texas or that's Bedlam?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Kansas State was down 24.
Yeah.
Right. So let's say there's that LSU. Let's say LSU's losses to Alabama, and I'm just picking LSU, could be any, you know, but they were down on players, and they're sitting there saying, hey, we're not taking Minnesota, you know, it's just, this thing's going to be fabulously contentious.
This
whole season's been fabulous with contention. We've been more games.
Yeah. Yes. It's been fabulously contentious, and half the country hadn't played yet. Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to personally thank the Big Ten for just screwing this up so many times. Which way? You cancel, you come back, you break up, you get back to, I mean, I don't know what you're doing.
You got the president
involved.
We're not
even done yet. We don't even know if you're going to do it.
A little presidential interference. Yeah. You bring the election in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got coaches.
Plenty of columns, plenty of podcasts. Oh, thank you, Big Ten.
Lawsuits.
I feel like I've written about the Big Ten 75% of the season so far.
Yeah.
No, meanwhile, nothing dull there.
We've said this before, but like Greg Sankey was like, you know what? We're going to start on the 26th. We're just going to stand there with our arms crossed and watch you all mud wrestle for 6 weeks. And that's basically what's happened.
No, it has been right now. The SEC is sitting prettiest. Now, again, we don't know If they're going to
have games
start,
canceled, let's be very clear here, because they don't have daily rapid testing. They're going to have problems. They have had problems. LSU's had problems. Auburn's had problems. Tennessee's had problems. Missouri had a big batch of tests the other day. There's been problems that haven't been reported that we've all heard about at some different places. They are going to have significant problems, but they have not been the problems in the scale and in the focus of these others because they haven't impacted games.
Right. And if this had truly blown up, it hasn't been that bad. There's been problems.
Yeah.
But it's not like, I don't know. We haven't had the colossal blow up that, like, if the Big 12 just all of a sudden were like, all our teams are out, or, you know, then the SEC just say, all right, we'll quit. But we know, like, they can always be the by going last, they were able to just be the reactive. And I actually think now the Big Ten could take that spot and say, let's see how we're doing in a month.
Sure. Yeah.
We haven't played any games.
Right. And that's the thing. If the Big Ten does get the daily rapid testing and they can run off an 8-game schedule, they'll look pretty good at the end of this thing. After, I mean, having like the worst PR month in history. But if they can make this thing work and produce an actual decent season and a champion and maybe even get a playoff bid out of it. Wow.
Yeah. This stuff will all be forgotten. I mean, this was just, this is just noise. People be like, remember when the Big Ten quit and then came back?
But all right, here's my question for you guys.
All right.
Are we still sure that the stance that a lot of people have taken, that you do not contract the virus playing football, is a legitimate stance? I'm just wondering, because I'm seeing some of the schools that have had issues in the last few days were between games. BYU plays on a Monday night against Navy, comes out of it, and they've got too many problems to play the next week against Army. So what happened? When did they get them? The stance for a lot of this stuff has been, these guys are contracting it socially. You know, they're going to parties. They're not getting it from football. BYU, parties?
Yeah, they're at the bar.
But they're not getting from Navy either, because I would like to think the naval base is clean, right? I went to Army. I was the most COVID risk there, right? Like, I had to go through four gates. I had to get my temperature taken. There were no other humans in the whole place other than, like, cadets, teams, and like three guys from like the Hackensack paper, and then like me and SIDs. Even I saw Mark Fratto, the old St. John's SID, was doing the PA, and he told me he got tested. So like, I feel like Navy's there, but there are other examples. Like, that has been a suspicion of a lot of people, that you can't pass COVID on the field, but there's been no like empirical study done, and it's a fascinating question that could really define how the rest of the season goes in a lot of ways, Pat.
Absolutely. And that's why I hope that people are going to tell us the truth, because then we will know, okay, is it bad for them to play because you're going to spread the virus or not? And we had the great Memphis party bus incident. You know, Memphis plays on Saturday against Arkansas State, comes out of that, and then has to cancel their next game because they got a bunch of positives. Now, the what came out was that there was a party limo that pulled up to a place called The Gather, this apartment complex right near campus, and that a bunch of players were seen going on and off this party limo the night after the game. But then one of the Memphis players comes out and says, no. This is, you go test Arkansas State. And lo and behold, actually, Arkansas State had 9 players out for their next game against Kansas State. Somebody just, I just want everybody to shoot straight with us. Where are they getting the virus?
So Memphis denied the party bus. I deny Memphis denying the party bus. We need the party bus to be true. It's too good of a story. No sources or evidence that says there was a party bus other than a sincere desire that it was true.
I personally want to believe the party bus.
Yes.
We all do.
I want to believe it. I'm going to not besmirch him and say they made bad decisions, or maybe they made good decisions. Really? What would you rather do? Who are they playing? Houston?
They were going to go to Houston. It's supposed to be Friday night.
Do you rather play Houston or go to a Memphis party bus? I mean, Memphis party bus, this is not a Memphis, a good town now. That's a serious party bus. Plus, you know, responsible. Someone else is driving. You know, they just no DUIs. You know?
Yeah, right.
What was it? West Virginia had a bunch of guys suspended for just team violations. It was like, a normal thing. I wonder what that is. It could be terrible, but It's like you know, guy's out. You look and you, oh, what is he out for though? Hamstring. Oh, okay. Nothing.
How boring.
I think you kind of, if you're going to go down, you want to go down.
You want to go party down party buses. Busing. Yeah.
Like the, like Daniel House on the, on the Rockets. Like, allegedly allowing a female COVID-19 tester into his hotel room. He gets thrown out of the bubble. Like, go down as a legend, man.
You guys will appreciate this because you know the guys involved. I Googled Daniel House the other day. I think like a lot of people in America, I was like, did you go to Texas A&M? You know, what year? Yeah, yeah, whatever. So I called up his Wikipedia just to kind of like refresh myself on Daniel House. So the picture that's on his Wikipedia in the background is the Florida bench at the time. And it's John Pelfrey and Matt McCall, like with that like serious assistant coach, like, are we going to hedge the screen right face? So I texted him. McCall is the UMass coach now, Dan, because this is really a UMass podcast. And Pell is, where's Pell the coach now? At Tennessee Martin?
Pell, yeah, Tennessee Tech.
Tennessee Tech. Yep. Yeah. So I texted them and I said, clearly you were skeptical of Daniel House long before the COVID testers and the rest of America was. So we had a good laugh. So Pell immediately is like, he's like, Texas A&M only scored 38 that day. So clearly we had to jump on him too. So that was a Daniel House.
That is an all-time legend. That's
That's
better than the chicken wings.
He and Lou Williams can sign at card shows for years. They're the heroes of COVID.
Him and Lou Williams, and then the Seahawks player who got cut for bringing in the girl.
Yeah. Oklahoma NBA State bubble kid. Is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
The games have been Russell great. Westbrook, how great was that Celtics-Raptors series? You guys are obviously big basketball fans.
Awesome. Like, yeah.
How about Russell Westbrook getting into it with Rajon Rondo's brother? There's no crowd there. But he gets in an argument with the crowd, and it's Rondo's brother. And then they go, well, Rondo's brother's running the barber program here. He's in charge of the barbers. In the honest to God, the NBA bubble is the freaking greatest. Why is Rondo's brother there, by the way?
You know.
No, he runs the bar. He oversees the barbers. Oh, of course. I mean, who else?
I got to find out now. Rondo's from Louisville. I got to see if his brother has a barber shop here.
We could do an entire podcast on that ridiculous bubble. Oh, yeah. The NHL bubble has no action. It's like the dullest thing. Just a bunch of, they just get drunk. Just a bunch of like Eastern Europeans getting hammered every night. We've had nothing out of there. All right, let's get to this Big 12 situation.
Yeah.
Iowa State loses to Louisiana 31-14. I mean, this isn't even close. Arkansas State beats Kansas State 35-13. Then to add to the Kansas woes, Coastal Carolina just manhandles Kansas 38-23. Texas Tech survives Houston Baptist 35-33.
They gave up 600 yards of offense to Houston Baptist.
My as Dan's pointed out, there's a lot of Baptists in Houston. So
a lot of Baptists in Houston. They got a big recruiting pool.
I saw on Twitter today that half their stadium's a CVS parking lot. So
we need to do a live pod from there. Like, get Daniel House back from his A&M days and do a
All right. Parking? It's in the parking lot of a CVS?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see that. I'm looking at the Google Maps. It does look like there's a strip mall.
Well, Houston is just one big strip mall, right? It's like Papado's, Ashley Furniture, and then like a highway. And then it's like another block with a Papado's and Ashley's Furniture, more highway. And a Rudy's
Barbecue.
So there's
grandstands on one side of this stadium, and the other side, there's nothing. Like not even like a little three rows or anything.
Nothing
except a strip mall. It's a CVS. It's not a strip mall. It's just a CVS.
No. Sweet.
It's even got the window for the pharmacy, like the drive-up pharmacy. It looks like you can look out on the field from there.
So yeah, you get your prescription filled on game day and catch a couple series while you're waiting.
Couple plays, yeah.
You think like the hard hitting safeties just point to the drive through after they lay the wood on a guy? Come across the middle again, you're going to the drive through, son.
That is phenomenal. There is a CBS in their stadium.
What's their status, Sully? Are they going to join the 130? Are they an independent soon?
Southland.
Or are they 1AA or whatever?
They're 1AA, right? Southland Conference?
They're in the Southland. Okay.
They got Southland printed on
their
stadium.
Do they have ambition? Do they have ambition? Do they want to join? I want them in.
I don't know. Like Incarnate Word once in, right? They have ambition. I don't know whether Houston Baptist is feeling spurred on to compete with Incarnate Word or not. I don't know what the, you know, religious affiliation competition is down there in Texas. Baylor's up there, TCU, SMU. I mean, come on.
Yeah. All religions should show. It's like a battle. It's like a Royal Rumble. You could do like a jamboree to start the season.
Jamboree. The religious jamboree of Texas. There we go.
pull up to the parking lot, have a shiner. Yeah.
How there's occasionally these upsets are so bad that it just dooms a regime. Like, I don't want to overreact to one loss, but like,
it's the overreaction podcast.
Yeah.
It's the overreaction Monday.
Is Les Miles just done? Like, is he just,
yes,
just forget it? This ain't happening.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It was 28-0 in the opener of his second season to Coastal Carolina. 28-0 in the second quarter. Absolute total train wreck. And I know Kansas has always been bad, but come on, man. You know, they brought in big name Les. Jeff Long loves his big name hires. He was the one that hired Bobby Petrino at Arkansas. And this one looks like it might work out about as well as that, except without the neck brace. I mean,
it worked out really at Arkansas with Bobby Petrino.
Well, until the neck brace, yeah.
Yeah, but who cares? They were really good. This is they weren't just out. I mean, they were out schemed. It was humiliating to watch.
Oh, it was pitiful.
It was. I mean, some of these plays were just humiliating. But they literally have worse players. They got pushed. There's no question that Coastal Carolina had better players on the field.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, like, that whole Sun Belt, they recruit the South.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, they went after all these like schools in the sticks that just, I just think these kids aren't any good.
Let's see.
So I was told Les Miles had an epic press conference after the Coastal Carolina game. I was writing my takeaways column, so I probably had the volume up for like 30 seconds of that game, and I heard Tim Brando be like, "Well, Les Miles didn't go the JUCO route. He went only high school players." And I was like, oh, boy. Like, this. I immediately put mute back on. I was like, yeah, I don't think carrying Les Miles' water at this point is really going to do much. But I did not get the chance to go on YouTube and see that. But, Sully, maybe you splice a little Rivals has it up here. Maybe splice a little Les Miles in for the listeners.
Does an outcome like this do anything to kind of slow down the rebuild you're trying to do here?
I don't think so. I think it hastens the correction. I think when you have a game like this, first of all, I never want to fix a team that has lost games. I would much rather fix teams that has won games.
I think it hastens the correction. Classic Les Miles quote. What does that mean?
Yeah, like the syntax is like, huh? What? What?
Yeah.
Hastens them. Go in the high school route.
Yep. Let's go in the high
school. That means he recruited a whole bunch of kids from like Johnson County, Kansas that aren't any good.
That is very, that is very, like, they have recruited decent, like just ranking wise and everything. And in their defense, like compared to what was happening, like, well, Charlie Weiss went straight JUCO and ruined the thing for 5 years. It's been generally dismal. And then they hired David Beatty to just recruit, and he had no idea what he was doing. So that flushed it for like another five. So I don't, Vince Lombardi reincarnated couldn't have got that thing going right away. But like, anyone with a pulse should have been able to not get blown out by Coastal Carolina.
Yep. I'm saying it. The regime is doomed. Done.
That's it. We're done. How about what thoughts on Iowa State and Kansas State? How bad are we in these situations? Because this was no better.
Well, to borrow Pete's line from last podcast, nobody has won the offseason the last two seasons like Matt Campbell. You know, they came into last year with a bunch of hype. They were ranked. And then they pretty much laid an egg. They barely won in triple OT against Northern Iowa and then went 7-6, which was a disappointment. And now they've come back and they get ranked again. And everybody's talking, oh, yeah, Iowa State. Oh, Matt Campbell. Yeah, outstanding. And he's done a very good job there. But they have not, when the expectations have been there, they have not performed. Because they lose by 17 to Louisiana. Louisiana's good. The smart members of this podcast picked Louisiana to cover. Thank you. But I didn't think Louisiana was going to win by 17 points. And it was just, it was a multi-system failure for Iowa State there. They let it, gave up a punt return touchdown, a kickoff return touchdown, and a 78-yard touchdown pass, I believe. That was a lot that went wrong.
Well, Nad saw it coming. He probably had him straight up, too. Nad really was all over that.
He had it.
Yeah, no, he was locked. He was locked in. Yeah. I mean, look, Louisiana was 11-3 last year. They returned their quarterback, their top two rushers. Good. They lost Robert Hunt, the guard, who was a second-round pick off the offensive line. But they returned a lot of talent on the offensive line. And the thought, and why I thought they had a chance to win, and they would certainly cover, was that they're kind of like a road-grading team. And Iowa State, even when they're best, they're not particularly pretty. Iowa State also, we all mentioned, has been a disaster in openers under Campbell. And that was obviously clearly that was the case. This weekend. So I'd be curious if somebody crunched the numbers, Sully, some of your betting denizens. The teams that played a game versus teams who have yet to play a game, what their record was. And that was not the case in this one, but it was the case in a few others, Arkansas State, K-State, which we're going to get to. I really feel like those teams all had significant advantages that played once over those that didn't. But yeah, go Cajuns. Billy Napier's on his way. Levi Lewis for Heisman. Let's let it rip, man.
All right. And Kansas State, obviously, nothing like getting the big noon game on Fox and losing to Arkansas State. Not going to help recruiting, I would think.
They gave up 5 touchdown drives of 65 yards or longer. It wasn't like they, you know, turned the ball over and gave short fields or anything. They just got marched on all game.
Well, and both those teams had significant line. I think Arkansas State was down 9 starters. K-State was down a swath of different guys. And that's why this is going to be a really interesting season. Like, how do you judge? Like, Chris Klein is not a bad coach. The guy has been part of 8 national title winning staffs, right? But if you're down 24 guys in some capacity, it's really hard to coach your team. And that's why this season is going to be a mess. Now we will embrace it as a beautiful mess, but in terms of like reality, it's going to be disjointed.
The other debacle, because we're only going to focus on the bad things here.
Yeah,
that's what we do.
The Mike Norvell era kicked off in Tallahassee. We were convinced that Georgia Tech was horrible.
Yeah. Let's not get too bullish on the Jackets.
They had a true freshman QB. Jeff Sims did a pretty nice job.
Yep.
So clearly they have recruited right in. I mean, imagine being a true freshman quarterback.
You know who Jeff Sims was committed to, Dan, until December?
No.
The Florida State Seminoles.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So they took their recruit and beat him with it.
You know who their recruit was in the previous class who decommitted? I'm sure Pat knows. It was Sam Howell, who's North Carolina's quarterback,
right.
Who will replace Trevor Lawrence as the All-ACC quarterback. So it's almost like two really good quarterbacks have seen what the brand was, were attracted to it, and then seen the current reality of the brand and said, yeah, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to go to one of these upstarts here.
Yeah, I'll take my chances over here. Well, he went in there and beat him. You know, I mean, this is, I don't know. Mike Norvell's a good coach. Won at Memphis, done a good job. Not the way you want to start. Kind of hasn't been maybe the smoothest first year there. Off season, all of that, dealing with players. There's been various flare-ups. Let's overreact. Thoughts on the Mike Norvell era at Tallahassee? That's now one game old.
Yeah, now 4 straight season-opening losses for Florida State with 3 different coaches. So they're rolling. Lost the last season opener for Jimbo, lost 2 under Willie Taggart, and now lose this one to Mike Norvell. And the thing that's got to be a little bit of a kick in the teeth for Florida State fans, and certainly surprised me, is I just thought, okay, Norvell knows how to draw them up, and maybe this was a lack of, you know, the practice interruptions, lack of spring, whatever, factored into it, but he's even knows how to drop plays, and they're going to move the ball, and they're going to throw, and they're going to score. James Blackman's stat line was terrible. Quarterback 23 out of 43 for 198 yards, 43 attempts and 198 yards, 4.6 yards per attempt. That is really bad. Threw an interception, had at least one of their 2 fumbles. I don't remember whether he had both of them or not, but James Blackman looked like James Blackman has looked far too often in his career, wildly inconsistent and prone to error. And I think they got to look now and say, gosh, I mean, is he our guy this year, or do we have another option? But it's For Florida State fans, it's got to be deja vu. And for Willie Taggart, he has to be sitting down there in Boca at FAU saying, hey, see, it wasn't all me. Give me a break.
So this is a thought, like, Pat overreacted properly to that mess of a Florida State loss. I wonder this. Now, I don't know how many spring practices Florida State had other than maybe two or three like everybody else. Like, they didn't have like an enormous, like Air Force had almost every one. Do you think Mike Norvell, if he had had 14, 15 spring practices, would have seen what a disastrous quarterback depth chart was and said, you know what, I'm going to get somebody on the transfer wire? Because look, you could get a competent quarterback like right away. Now, I have not asked anybody at Florida State this. I have no idea. But what was the name of the JUCO kid they had at Memphis for those 2 years? The kid, Pat, with the arm sleeve tattoo. Yeah. You remember I was talking about? He's a really good player.
Between Paxton Lynch and Brady White, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, he was painting fences. He had been committed to Tennessee. He played at Tennessee.
Riley Ferguson.
Thank you.
There we go.
The Tennessee tie will wake Sully up out of his slumber. So anyway. Norvell shows up at Memphis, needs a quarterback, goes against Riley Ferguson. Riley Ferguson is like a delightfully good AAC quarterback. So what I'm saying is this, like, again, quarterback dynamics at these big programs, would you scare off James Blackman? Would you keep guys from recruits coming? I have no idea. But if you walked in and, like, would they have taken Anthony Brown from BC? Like, there are plenty of, like, decent quarterbacks on the wire. I was like, Mike Norvell is too smart of a quarterback guy, too good of a play caller to have watched that for 15 practices and said, oh, we can go win games with that. Also, the offensive line has just been hideous there for a long time. They have a good young line coach, Alex Atkins, who was Charlotte's OC last year. But like, if there's one position historically you cannot microwave good, it's the offensive line. If you don't have the veterans there and you don't have the size there, that is a position that needs to be slow cooked. You cannot just make it happen there. And it's just not a surprise. It was Trickett was really like the failing coach on Jimbo's staff. And that's where that program really started to slip from an elite level because it couldn't compete on the line. And it just hasn't recovered.
Florida State 32nd in recruiting right now for class of 2021.
Hmm. Not great.
3-4 stars. That ain't going to get it done either. New staff, you got to be cranking. You and Florida are the ones cranking right now. Generally in the state of Florida, one of them does really, really well, and then they get overwhelmed by scandal and fall apart. Yeah. And the other, there's another one that's doing very well, and then there's one that's just horrible. Those three schools pretty much just take their turns with massive success followed by humiliating scandal.
That's true.
The circle of life.
It's been going on for decades down there. Makes why Florida is such an awesome place.
Nevin Shapiro's nodding in his federal prison cell.
Yeah, I mean, they've all had their, you know, they can only like laugh at each other so much, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, right. Nevin Shapiro, shut up, you and Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, right. You know, like, exactly. That's the thing.
So. We'll see what that is right now. But right now, Florida and Miami are winning the recruiting wars, which is not good when you just got beat by Georgia Tech.
Yeah. Hello, record book. Hello, small sample Heisman. How about that?
All right. They hand out the Heisman at the end of the year. We like to hand it out every week. We like the small sample overreaction Heisman. So let's hand out some hardware. Pat, do you have a small sample Heisman prepared?
Of course I do. Of course. I am going to go with Mikhail Cunningham, the Louisville quarterback, because he helped me get my lock of the week right. I picked the Cardinals to win and to cover against Western Kentucky, and they did both, and Cunningham was really good. He's a big playmaker. He will chuck the ball downfield, and he will get plays made. Threw for 343 yards, 3 touchdowns, 10 yards per attempt. Also had 24 yards and a touchdown rushing. And he set up now Louisville to play Miami in what's going to be the game day game, which is another sign that, by golly, we do not have a full and complete season going on. But Louisville-Miami is the game day game Saturday from Cardinal Stadium. So Mikhail Cunningham, who used to be Malik Cunningham, and then he changed his name or had his name changed or something between seasons, and now he's Mikhail Cunningham. He's my small sample Heisman.
Lamar Jackson versus Ken Dorsey, I'd be in. Oh, D.R. King, he looked okay on Thursday. My small sample Heisman is a salute to the competitive game that kept Saturday night interesting. I am going to take Tulane tailback Tyjae Spears. He had 11 carries, 105 yards, averaged 9.5 yards per carry. Willie Fritz, give him the ball. He also had two catches for 30 yards. He is my second favorite Tulane player behind Fat Watts, their receiver who had two catches for 15 yards. But Tyjae Spears, young kid, redshirted last year. He's, I believe, from Ponchatoula, Louisiana, and is a promising player for the Wave who were down big, came back at mighty South Alabama. I mean, they basically kept South Alabama out of the playoff. They scored 21 second half points, roared back, and won the game. I'm sure, Pat, we have similar degenerate watching. Yeah, they were down 24-6, Tulane was.
Yeah.
Stormed back and won. I was locked in.
Yeah, I was coordinating South Alabama. It was the best team in the nation when they were up big there. Going to be 2-0 with big upsets.
Yeah,
but no.
Sadly, the boys from Mobile are crying in their beers.
My small sample Heisman goes to Bailey Zappe of Houston Baptist. I know he's probably not eligible to win the Heisman.
That's okay.
Bailey Zappe.
What do I care? I'm not allowed to vote, or, you know, this is my Heisman. Small sample Heisman. Look, this kid is from Victoriaville, Texas. He did not have a Rivals page.
Wow.
He did not have a... His name appears on 24/7, but that's it. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Talk about non-recruited. Even in his school bio, it just says he's a three-year letter winner at high school. Okay? He's now a senior. He walked into Jones AT&T Stadium up in Lubbock and threw it around like Patrick Mahomes. 30 of 49 for 567 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, that is phenomenal. I don't care if it's not.
I love it.
This kid is nobody. 6'2", 215. Victoria East, not Victoriaville.
Yeah,
Victoria.
I watched a little bit of that. He's a hoss. He's a load, right?
We'll see. Who knows what he can do? He threw 35 TDs last year, 15 interceptions, but he lit him up.
Yeah, he's a two-point conversion away from forcing overtime.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that earns you the Heisman. That is Texas hero status right there. Nobody wanted him. Went to Houston Baptist with the CVS in the stadium. Forget Jones AT&T show. You can literally buy AT&T cards in the end zone of Houston Baptist CVS Stadium. It's not a corporate sponsor. It's just the real estate.
Beautiful.
Anyway, congratulations, Bailey. You got my Heisman Trophy. Good job, young man. All right. We've said many mean things on the Overreaction podcast because this is what we do. So let's try to say something nice. Pat, can you say anything nice?
I can, with the caveat, of course, as usual. But it was a bad day for Matt Campbell's in college football. Not just the coach at Iowa State, but also the punter from the Citadel. And I am going to say something nice because I'd like to thank Matt Campbell for providing us the funniest play of the season by far, thus far. And I think this one could last all year. I think it's got a real opportunity. If you didn't see it, Citadel was playing South Florida on Saturday night. Poor Matt Campbell's back in his own end zone to punt. Takes his eyes off the snap. Perfect snap. I mean, it's like hits him right, you know, almost chest level, maybe a little bit higher than that. Goes through his hands, goes to the ground. He scrambles over, picks it up. And I don't understand why punters at that point don't just throw an incompletion. But he tried to kick it. And he basically hit it off his shin about 3 feet right into the hands of a South Florida player who had a punt return touchdown without actually going anywhere. Greatest play of the year so far. So thank you, Matt Campbell, for the comic relief on that.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate on you, Pat, as you're ripping the punter. Wouldn't he have to throw his incompletion to the line of scrimmage?
So it's not maybe grounding. I mean, but all right. So you get a grounding call.
Right? Yeah, and then you get a safety. So why not just
I would take a safety over punting it to the other team in the end zone.
So just don't throw it. Just tuck it. That's all. I just want your special team strategy to be sound. That's all. I am going to say something nice about Southern Miss interim head coach Scotty Walden. He makes his debut this week after Jay Hobson gets gassed after week one. He resigned. Scotty Walden is 30 years old, which makes him the youngest coach in college football. And he also makes $110,000 a year, which makes him by far and away the lowest paid coach in college football. The chief of staff at Texas, which is essentially the ops guy Tom Herman brought from Houston with him. God bless him, Fernando Logo. He makes three times what Scotty Walden makes. I had an AD at a Power 5 school text me and say, our executive chef makes more money than Scotty Walden. All right. Scotty Walden, $110,000. He is going to energize the Southern Miss Golden Eagles when they play Louisiana Tech this weekend. Brought the ice cream truck to practice on Thursday. He was the youngest head coach in all of the NCAA at age 26 a few years ago. East Texas Baptist University or State. It sounds like one of those made up schools in a football movie, but it was actually real. They were 7-3 that year. So an easy guy to root for. He said the players really relished the strawberry mango popsicles. And we all like Southern Miss. We all remember watching those great Jeff Bauer teams. Maybe Scotty Walden can energize them a little bit and get them looking a little feistier than they did that Thursday at South Al.
Dabo Swinney made $9.3 million last year.
Yes.
On a weekly rate, that is $178,000.
Yes. So Dabo makes more in a week than Scotty.
Much more in a week.
Yeah.
Not bad. All right. I was going to give it to my new favorite quarterback to receiver combo, Spencer Rattler and Charleston Rambo.
Yep.
Doesn't get any better than Rattler to Rambo. They connected twice in Saturday's Sooner victory over Missouri State. I think this is why college football is so great, because you have things like Rattler to Rambo. I mean, how do you not root for that? You got to be a real Longhorn fan to just be like, yeah, I despise it. Anyone else like, it's phenomenal. Spencer Rattler was born to play quarterback at OU, and Charleston Rambo was born to play. But I am actually going to say something really nice about the whoever it is that was inside the Kansas Jayhawk mascot, whatever costume the other night. And I think they have a half Jayhawk. They have like little Jay or something. They got two of them.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. They kept showing them on the Fox broadcast, and whoever these two people are, there are no fans there.
Right.
Okay, Pat, you would have to tell us, because you once were the Stanford Cardinal. But if you have no fans, you were the tree.
Yeah.
There's no fans to react to what you're doing.
It's bad. It's bad.
And you're losing 28-0 to Coastal Carolina. How in the world do you stay upbeat as mascots must? And yet every time they showed them on TV, they were doing something.
Were they really?
They were waving their flapping, right? The Jayhawk never, No, that's the St. Joe's Hawk. I don't know. They were
different Hawk.
Yeah. I would have quit in half. I would have taken off the top and just.
Yeah. I would have had to bend under my arm, like a humid
Kansas night, like, gross.
Sweating, watching this craptastic football team and trying to get the crowd that doesn't exist excited. So I don't know who you guys are, but you are way better than any of the Kansas football players. What you do, you are better at what you do than anyone over in that football building is at what they do. So hats off to the Jayhawk and Little Jay. All right. That's our podcast. We'll be back midweek. Hopefully we'll have all the details on what the Big Ten's going to do. Maybe they will finally vote. Maybe they'll cancel again. Maybe they'll come back and then cancel. We don't know. We'll be here for you. We're on the twists and turns. Please subscribe. Leave us nice reviews. And we'll talk to you later.